This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, it's Lee Salisbury here. Welcome to Soap from the Box, the TV podcast that goes behind the scenes of the biggest shows on your television screen. I hope you listened to James Redmond, Hollyoaks OG. That episode dropped on Monday. Today, it's time for a musical special. It's the weekend. Let's go retro. Let's go back to the 90s and the noughties. You're going to love this. The bright lights and fame began for my next guest when in 1996, at the age of just 17, he auditioned to be in a new boy band with attitude and edge, was the description. Five were born and went on to shift 1.6 million albums and 3.4 million singles just in the UK alone. He's now a solo artist and performs with Five still and has got a brand new song released today. And if you're listening to this just after midnight, you're probably a little bit drunk, but you will get the first exclusive play of that very single, a summer banger at its very best. It's a pleasure to welcome a proper pop legend, Richie Neville. Hello, mate.
Hey, mate. How you doing? Thanks so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure amazing to have you on. And I mean, we're going to get to the new song and the new venture, which is called The 998, but it is a proper summer banger. People have got to get very excited about this, haven't they?
Well, do you know what? It's nice to hear other people say it. You know, Liam is my production buddy. Like, we're a duo. The 998 is a duo. And, you know, he's been a really successful remixer for a while. And you know, I've got into my production as well. And we both were feeling it. But sometimes you don't know if you're deluded. But, you know, it's when you hear people like yourselves and, you know, you do get that genuine feedback where
Yeah,
like I can hear it in people's voices. Do you know what I mean? Where they're like, oh, I really like this song. So, yeah, that is a really nice feeling because we sit in the studio and you have all sorts going through your head. But you have it's like a cycle of, I really love this song. And then, is this song any good anymore? Because you've listened to it so many times and you've worked on it so, you know, for so much. So it's great to get that kind of feedback. And yeah, we are really excited about it and we really love it.
Are you one of these people that's always had a bit of a ear for it? Because I've always been quite like when I used to work on the Saturday Show, which I mentioned before we start recording. We used to sit in the office and basically every week they used to play the new singles coming out, and we used to basically kind of vote who we thought should be on the show if it was a new artist. And I remember Umbrella got played and no one liked it apart from me by Rihanna. I was like, what? But I've got a knack for normally knowing which songs will be big. Like, say for Five, did you listen to singles and go, yeah, this one's going to be huge?
Yeah, very, very often, because you'd have the album and they kind of would usually pick themselves in a way. But that said, sometimes you'd have a difference of opinion between band and label.
Right. Okay.
That did happen on one particular song, which I'll tell you the full story, actually, if you want to know.
Yeah, totally.
It's called Simon Cowell. Well, we just released Keep On Moving. Now, to me, Keep On Moving is an absolute pop song.
Oh, God. I mean, it was your biggest single, I think, wasn't it? Five's biggest single.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It definitely is our biggest song. I mean, you know, Everybody Get Up was pretty big. And if you're getting down with
Yeah, I mean, you had a few.
Keep On Moving struck a chord. And we were like, you know, he was like, yeah, but, you know, I feel like you've alienated your fans a little bit with that because it's too like grown up. And we're like, what planet are you on? Like it's an absolute banger. What? No, we've got to go like right back now. And we released like Don't Want to Let You Go, which was far and away our worst single we ever released. And we're like, why are we doing this? This is insane. Like, we should follow up with another banger. Like, why? No. We've got to please your core fans now. But like, this is a mistake. And actually, I mean, look, Cal doesn't make many mistakes.
No. Your core fans have surely grown with you as well. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was a strange one. And like I say, it doesn't make that many mistakes, but I feel that one was.
Well, let's go back in time. So when you formed, which was from 1996, that audition, I mean, first of all, I read this. I don't know whether it's true. Apparently there were over 3,000 hopefuls and one of them was Russell Brand.
Yes, it was actually 97. And apparently so, yes, it was.
That's mad.
He came to that audition, yeah.
Imagine Russell Brand in five. I mean, it just doesn't... can't see that, can you? Can't see him doing it. Apparently did... I read it earlier, Evanescence, I think. He did perform that song. But what was it like, that audition? I mean, obviously, it was an open audition, I'm guessing. So loads of people there. I mean, did you ever think, oh, yeah, I've got a chance here?
So what it was, I mean, I saw it in, it was a, like the national press had picked up on it. So I saw it in a newspaper. And the reason they picked up on it, it was the Spice Mania was, you know, in full throttle. And Simon Cowell had approached the people who put the Spice Girls together originally, but lost them to a different management company. He said, well, they've obviously got an eye for this. So essentially, we were the Spice Boys, if you like.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cal said, do the same, but with boys, with guys. So the media then picked up on that. I'd never planned to be in a band, a pop band. It really wasn't particularly on my radar. I enjoyed singing, but I was more into like rock bands and things like that and dance music. So, I just saw the article and I don't know, I was young and the article actually said, do you want to be a Spice Boy? And my initial thing was, oh, please give me a break. Then because the Spice Girls are so big, they're going to make Spice Boys. That's a terrible idea. So I flicked past almost in disgust. And then the cogs started turning and I was like, well, they probably wouldn't call it the Spice Boys, would they? Because that would be awful.
That would be awful. That would have been awful, yeah.
Yeah. So then I went back and I was like, oh. And I don't know. I literally did this seven times where I would go on through the newspaper and I'd go back to that page. And then I'd go, no. And then I'd go back. And then I just went down and I remember throwing the paper down. I was like, you seen this, Mom? And she said, well, I did see that, yeah. And I was thinking, like, maybe you should try it out. And I was like, yeah. And it said, you know, anybody interested, bring a backing track and your dancing shoes to Pineapple Studios in London. Obviously, I'm from Birmingham, so I had to get a backing track together, which was a bit of a...
Bit of a big...
Yeah, so, and then, you know, we went down to London and... It was just crazy, you know, there was just like thousands of people pouring out of Pineapple Studios, sort of queuing up. It was a media circus. There was a Spice Girls tribute band turned up.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, what was I, 16, 17? 17. I'm just like, what on earth am I doing here? And yeah, then they it was like cattle. They ushered 10 in at a time.
Dance for me, boys.
Well, I was never trained at dancing. It wasn't a thing, you know. I was a raver, really, you know, clubbing and stuff, but never, you know, formal dance or break dance.
Yeah.
So, like, I've walked into this room and I'm literally putting my rucksack down. The music's on. I've turned around and people are busting shapes, man. Like, seriously busting shapes, the windmills going off and everything. And I felt really awkward, I've got to be honest. I was sort of shuffled from side to side. I was like, I'm not feeling this. I feel really stupid right now.
It is quite funny if you go to a place like Pineapple Dancing and everyone's just, this kind of like musical theatre house, everyone's just kind of just warming up, do you know what I mean, constantly and doing these shapes. It must have been so intimidating.
Well, it was just kind of, yeah, it was just the, you know, I get it. People really wanted it. But it was just so fast. It was like, Ian, I hadn't even put my bag down. The music's on. And it's like, dance, you know? So I was like, wow, okay. And I don't know. I just bopped a little bit, you know?
And what was your backing track? What did you sing to?
So I'd done a performance in a singing competition anyway of George Michael, Freedom.
Oh, okay, so, great.
Yeah, that's what I sang. And yeah, so if you got a piece of paper, that meant you could go and do the singing part. And I got a piece of paper. So
brilliant, you know, for the shuffling. Probably as well, it probably helped that, like, because they probably wanted a bit more of a rough and ready band, like they said, Attitude and Edge. That actually probably helped that you didn't do all of the proper dance. But do you know what I mean? That was a bit kind of not quite perfected.
Perhaps. I think it was purely a sense of literally, does this person A, kind of, you know, to whittle it down, could they have a look that could work in a band that we're trying to make? And do they have a sense of rhythm at all?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And then I think, yeah, that was kind of the quick process of whittling it down. And then obviously it was, can they sing? And then it was a long wait. I mean, I think it was two or three months, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. And they were probably then working out who went with who, I suppose, because that must be the final, probably like doing a wedding seating plan. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
it was, but it wasn't the final. They didn't pick the final band. They whittled it down to 14 guys. And then us 14 were then asked to meet up at different studios. And we were sent a song that was not a known song. It was a song by some songwriters. It's called Turn It Into Something Good. And we all had to write a rap for the middle eight.
Oh, wow. God, it's like a proper intense, like, process, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it was. And all of this was filmed.
So right, wow.
It was the beginning of kind of, in a way,
Obstock kind of following, yeah.
Wanted to do that with us. Unfortunately for them, we swore far too much. we would break out in fights. We were just an absolute nightmare that they just gave up on this TV idea. So, you know, yeah. But then, you know, I think they kind of had this idea brewing, you know, this like X Factor pop idol, pop stars and that kind of thing.
So, God, you might have been the beginning of that. And then obviously, so that process all happened. You got into the band first. Then there was a problem. Obviously, there were two Richards. So then you had to decide Abs became Abs and you became Richie.
I think Abs always wanted to be called Abs anyway.
Did he?
It was never a discussion about it. No, yeah, he just... Yeah,
it was Jay Brown, Sean, Ab Scott. And then what was it? I mean, you did. So you signed to Simon Cowell. Like we said, you're with Simon Cowell. 6 album deal, which is massive. But I mean, you literally went. I mean, it was quite fast and you became absolutely huge. I mean, what was it like that sudden thinking about how long it took to get all that process? And then suddenly you're there and it did. Does it just kind of take your breath away? Was it kind of like, wow, I can't believe this is happening so fast?
Yes. It really was. I mean, you know, you're 17, I was 17 turning 18. We went, you know, it started off a little slow, like the first month when we moved in together, it was May 97, I think. Yeah, it was. And, you know, it was a bit slow. There was a few days where we weren't really where we weren't doing anything. And we should have appreciated those days, to be honest, because, you know, there was a bit of, you know, we tried out a few different choreographers and I think they were... typical of God rest his soul, the late great Bob Herbert. I think he was trying to see if we could save a bit of money and choreograph ourselves.
Right, okay.
Hired the dance studios, and I mean, we literally just messed around all day, throwing things at each other and doing pelvic thrusts. Going, well, are we trying to work out a dance? None of us could do it. We were like, it just looked ridiculous. We needed a choreographer, so. And then all, you know, we go to a few different studios and then all of a sudden it was Sweden. And it's, by the way, you're working with like the biggest producers in the world right now. This is where it gets serious. They want to work with you. You know, this is it kind of thing. And that was with working with Dennis Pop, who'd, you know, risen to production fame with Ace of Base The person who discovered that. Then they'd moved on to the Backstreet Boys, who had been going for a good few years. They went on to work with us, Britney, Max Martin then came out of that, and he's gone on. Dennis sadly died, and Max Martin kind of took that mantle and went on and just became the powerhouse. Katy Perry, you know, you name it. I mean, he's worked with everyone. The Weeknd, I mean, he's huge, huge. I think he may have surpassed Lennon and McCartney now in number ones in the US.
Oh my God, it's incredible. And it started again. And what was it like? What was it like moving, like you said, moving in with the band? I mean, as we all know, especially when you're young, getting on. I mean, was it hard? How did it go as a band? Did you kind of get on better as you went along? Or was it, I mean, it's, I always say it, being a solo artist must be quite tough, because obviously you're on your own, and you know, when you're on tour, you're the only one probably, you can't go out without being recognized. Whereas at least, I suppose, when you're in a band, you're in it together.
Yeah, I think, look, you know, it's no secret that we had a lot of infighting, and
Do you know what I mean?
A lot of bad dynamics. And you know, because you're young, you're not mature enough to deal with situations. You're also working 18-hour days, you're worn out, you're tired. Then you're dealing with like being really famous, you know, at the time, and you know, you can't really do, it's an adjustment phase. And but I obviously saw solo artists. I also went out with a solo artist.
Yeah, you went out with famously Billy Piper, which must have been, again, mad to be suddenly in a relationship that's everywhere.
Crazy, yeah, front page news, and you know,
wow.
I mean, we'd go out, like, you know, say we were going to go shopping, and we'd have like perhaps following us in cars. I mean, it was a bit like a James Bond film, you know, it'd be like, try and move that car, you know.
And how do you deal with it? Like, is it, because I mean, I'm just laughing along, and it must be like, it, I suppose, it's everyone, a youngster's dream, I suppose, a little bit, to go out and be recognised. But then when it's actually happening, do you just wish it would go away? Not the kind of what the experience you're having, but I suppose when you're being followed everywhere, it must be just exhausting.
That's exactly right. And I always say fame is fun for 6 months.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, I wish this had an off switch. Yeah. And you realise it doesn't. I wish I could just turn this off for one day and just go out and be normal again, you know, and then, you know, and then get back to work. But yeah, look, you know, it's just part of the learning curve, and it's part of the kind of, you can't preempt it. Something you just have to go, oh, okay.
And if you went back in time now, knowing what you know, is there things you would have done differently or dealt with it differently? Do you know what I mean? Now you've seen what it's like, and you've come out of that huge bubble, I suppose, of fame, you know, where the boy band famous. Would you change anything going back?
Oh, 100%. I mean, definitely I would be on the accountants, all that kind of side of things, way more.
Because I'm guessing at that time, I remember hearing a lot of stories about S Club 7, obviously not earning hard. I mean, it was kind of a bit like a cattle market, wasn't it, with you guys as well in bands? You know, like there was a lot of money being made, but the bands weren't getting that much of it.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I mean, you know, because you're 18 and you're from a working class background, you are earning a lot of money. You are, you know, you're doing okay. But it's not life-changing money. You're just like doing, you know, you're doing well. But definitely, you know, there was money definitely went missing, and things have happened. There's no way, because when you tally it all up, which I have done, I went through a long process of like anger.
Yeah,
And you tally it up and you go, no, we were proper done. How come? And it's like, how do you even trace that? And then you're fighting. So you have to just then accept it. Okay. It's all just life experience, isn't it? You know?
And so many people, I mean, have you seen the Whitney film? I never realized like the dad had given credit cards he gave kind of credit cards of her account to everyone who worked at the company. And and that's her dad. I mean, it's kind of crazy that you're the little pawns in a way. You know, I mean, everyone, because, you know, I always remember people saying, you know, any band that went on shows, like when I did the Saturday show, if the performance was amazing, they put loads into it. That every, you know, I remember the music book you say to me, but that'll be coming out the band's wages. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing as well. You think you're driving around in a Mercedes, and you know you've got all of us had individual drivers and stuff like that, and it's like you don't realize that that's coming out of your
they're paying for it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But even so, you know, I mean, we sold 20 million records, you know,
worldwide,
when you were Tally
Dots, yeah.
Worldwide singles and albums. That's a lot. That generates a lot of money. You
yeah.
know? We definitely made the record label, you know, hundreds of millions, I think. It would be hundreds of millions they made from us.
And that's probably still, I mean, because it's changed so much now that people are out there doing it on their own, but missing that record company. Because I suppose what record companies give you is that massive push that's hard to get, isn't it? But there's pros and cons with everything. Is it true though? I read that you obviously have massive, massive hits, but apparently two of the biggest songs ever in pop were kind of floated around for five, Baby One More Time by Britney and Bye 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 for NSYNC.
So, the two stories for that. So, Hit Me Baby One More Time, Simon Cowell heard it and went, I want that song 4-5. He called Max Martin, and we were a successful band at this point as well. So, it was ballsy of Max. But he said, yeah, sorry, Simon, I can't give you that song. And Simon offered, he said, what's your favourite car, Max? He went, crazy car. I can't, some mad top spec Mercedes. And he went, okay, I'm going to send one. You promise that song to my boys and I'll have you one by next week.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was like, Simon, thank you. Like, I appreciate what you're saying, but I've already promised it to this American girl. And he's like, what's her name? He's like, Britney Spears. He's like, who's she signed to? And it's like a small kind of a jive, I think it was, which isn't
as
big.
Which is quite, yeah,
BMG.
Quite small. Yeah.
And he's like, Max, are you crazy? Like, I've given you a successful worldwide boy band here, and you're going to give it to an unknown girl who's never had a hit before. And he's like, yeah, I've already signed, it's already done. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah. You must have then been, I mean, I remember being on the Saturday show when Britney first came in, and it was, I don't think I've ever experienced anything like Britney back then. It was like this person literally went from no one to someone that the world knew within like a day. It was crazy, Britney, wasn't it? Did you work? You must have worked alongside her because that was your biggest time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd bump into her a lot. In fact, I gave her one of the MTV Europe Music Awards. I gave her Best International Female.
Oh, wow.
Awarded it to her. In Dublin many moons ago.
Amazing. So, let's go back and Bye Bye Bye. Tell me that story. I mean,
Bye 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 actually a different story. Because like we all had different tastes in music and not many of us were particularly into pop as personal taste. I was into dance music and rock music, and pop was kind of like I liked 80s pop, but I wasn't really keen. I've got to be honest, like the ballad singing boy bands,
at night and sticking a Westlife album on.
Well, Westlife came after us, but like Boyzone, And that's, you know, not that I love Boyzone now as people. Like,
yeah, but it wasn't your type. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't my thing, you know. And then, you know, you had sort of Jay and Abs were like massive hip hop heads, and Sean was into like all kinds of soul and stuff. And Scott liked all sorts, but, you know, probably the most poppy in taste. So we wanted to bring flavors of that. And I think that's why the producers, when they worked with us and, you know, the label saying, look, just let rip, get some rock in there, get some funk in there, like, you know. And so that was our kind of mix. So when we were played Bye Bye Bye, it's a great pop song, but NSYNC were already a band, and you know, we were played it in the studio and we were like, look, respect guys, this sounds absolutely, it's gonna be a smash, but it's gonna be a smash for NSYNC,
right? Okay.
It doesn't sound like Five. It's not us. It's a brilliant song, but it's just not.
Oh,
not
that's
our
great,
thing.
Ben, that you kind of knew it was a great song, but you were like, it's just not us. Because you obviously still, because you're right, it might have just totally not worked with you. Do you know what I mean? Things, it's weird, isn't it? Like, would Baby One More Time have been that big without Britney doing it in the school uniform? Probably not.
I mean, you know, I don't, yeah, maybe not, don't know. But,
And then, I mean, you obviously had some of the biggest hits. We'll skip forward to, I mean, there's so much we could talk about, but skip forward. I mean, one fact that I loved is actually you performed at one of the biggest festivals ever, Rock in Rio, to 500,000 people. I mean, events like that, you must have been going, like you said, you were from a working class background in, where are you from? Birmingham?
Yeah, from
Birmingham. Yeah. So it must be like those moments must be like, wow. Because obviously that things like that, it'll be hardly any, you know, there's only so many artists who maintain, you know, 50 years in the business. But you must have been going, wow, this will kind of stay with me forever.
100%. I mean, a little anecdote that you might not know for Rock in Rio was that we got sick of, like you say, just being the kind of just workhorses, like 18-hour days and all this stuff. We were like, are we ever going to be able to? Because we go number one, for instance, in the UK, like having done like a 2-month campaign, hardcore, like work. And then you'd never get to enjoy that week of being number one because you're off promoting it in Europe or somewhere else, or America or whatever. So on the plane to Rio, we were going 5 days before and we had 18-hour days of press come in and all of this. And we just sat there and like we had this conversation. And we went, like, come on, we go into Rio to play Rock in Rio, man. Like, why can't we, you know, like, can't we just enjoy it? And we were like, I know, but it's all booked now. And then we were like, well, we don't have to do it, do we? And we were like, well, I guess not. Like, and they were like, what are they going to say if we turn around and say, we're not doing it? Are they going to force us? Like, they can't physically force us to do it. And we were like, yeah. So we landed and we went, we need to have a meeting with the record label. And they were like, okay, what is it? And we were like, you know, all that press that you've got booked in for 5 days. They were like, yeah. We went, we're not doing it.
Oh my God.
Chill by the pool. We're going to drink some beer and we're just going to have a little mini holiday. And then we're going to play Rock in Rio, do like sound check and do that. And they're like, what? We're like, yep.
Oh, that's amazing. And did you get to, you got to do that as well?
Well, they went off and they were like, they obviously went, they're really serious about this. And they came back and they said, there are these 3 or 4 things that are like so important. Can you just do these 3 or 4 things dotted around? There was a Brazilian TV show and something else and something else. And we went, okay, fine. We'll do those 4 things. They're that important.
Good, but the rest of the time, well, good for you, because I'm guessing like the big Mariahs and stuff must do that all the time. Do you know what I mean? It's like, because it was like you said in that, I've told this story before on Pop the Box, but I always remember S Club, like used to be asleep while they had the makeup done and would wake up being like, are we still in China? I mean, it was like for people listening, like those, like you come on the Saturday show to promote that, then you'd be straight, because I remember we used to always be like, come for drinks to all the guests. They'd be like, oh, well, I wish we could, we're off to Spain. Do you know what I mean?
No, honestly, there were many, many times. Another thing about Five as well, which is like kind of unique to our story, is like for, say, a British band, you'd normally do UK and Ireland, then head over to Europe. Gradually, like I'm talking in success, you'd have a few hits and it would grow there. Then you'd get maybe Asia and Australia would pick up the phone and go, oh, look, you know, you're doing well there. Come over here. And it would sort of work like that. But because the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC started hitting and boy bands started hitting as we were in Inception on single number one, Clive Davis from Arista picks up the phone because they're like BMG and Arista are kind of like in bed with each other kind of thing.
Yeah.
So Clive picks up the phone instantly from single number one and says, we want Five in the US.
Wow, so, which is massive for an UK artist back then.
Yeah, so it was like we literally, in 2 years, tried to break the globe.
Wow.
And it was intense. And we would, I would wake up on a coach or a bus or whatever, and I would wake up in like a panic, you know, like kind of can't breathe. And I'd be looking at the roadsides to see what continent I was
on. You were in, yeah, what language they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Is it like Asian language? Is it like, you know?
That is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, crazy, yeah.
And what was it like? Obviously, then you broke up, which all bands, well, most bands eventually do. What was it like kind of adjusting, I suppose, to life after it? Because, I mean, obviously now we know, you know, people are a lot more open about mental health and stuff. But it must be hard, yeah. I suppose, in a way, to suddenly lose that, as much as you kind of probably want to lose at the time, like you said, you want an off switch sometimes to turn it off, but then it must be quite hard to come to terms with normal life again, I suppose.
Yeah. One thing I've likened it to, you know, you've heard like how they say like people that when they leave the army, a lot of the time they can struggle.
Right. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Because they know exactly what they're doing. They're told where to go. They're told what, you know what I mean? Their whole life is rigidly organized. But it was, I think it was a similar thing mentally, you know, because I went from, you know, like I say, having 18 hours of my day organized to nothing. And like, it was kind of cool for a little while. It was, you know, oh, okay, I've got nothing on today. what shall I do? And then, you know, because you're young and you're silly, you start going out a lot and, you know,
spending lots of the money you've earned, probably.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was in the studio and I was kind of, you know, I was making music, but I don't know. I can't explain it. Like, my heart wasn't in it. I know in order to do something really successfully, especially that, you've really got to want it.
Yeah.
You've got to.
Yeah.
And all of you has got to be in alignment with that. Like, and I was like too... The experience, I don't know. I think I needed some time. I probably should have had some therapy, if I'm honest.
Yeah, which probably nowadays you would. But again, we're talking about a different time when it wasn't kind of like seen like it is now to be so fine to do that. Do you know what I mean? So we're looking back years where it was probably like, right, you just kind of cope with stuff yourself.
Yeah, yeah. So I genuinely, you know, things spiraled downward for me and I... You know, I turned down a solo deal with Cowell because he wanted me to sing like ballads, basically. He thought that, you know, I said, but I want to do something with a bit more teeth. And I get it because he, you know, I come from it from an artistic point of view. He comes from it from a completely business.
Yeah. How am I going to make money out of this? Do you know what I mean? And that's what
I think I can see you selling ballads.
Yes.
I said, but I don't like ballads. He said to me, what you like, and that to me was such an alien concept. I was like, what, how can I go and sell something? Like, I mean, by what I mean by selling it is sing a song with passion and, you know, sell that song if I don't like it.
Yeah. Isn't it funny because it's changed so much, I think, now, because music is a lot more authentic, I think, these days. I mean, you wouldn't have someone like Billie Eilish doing a kind of, you know, Leona Lewis song. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of totally, at least it's changed for the good in that way, I think.
Yeah, yeah, no, and that is cool. But, you know, so I said thanks, but no thanks. And then, I don't know, I had a problem with my vocal cord as well. Like, I had a polyp which needed removed. But basically, long story short, I was going out, I went and did a uni tour with a rock band, which was great fun, but I couldn't speak for a week afterwards.
Oh, God.
And I was like, something wrong with my voice. So I went and had it looked at, and they said, yeah, you need an operation. And I'm quite a spiritual person. So I was like, something's telling me to step away.
Yeah.
Something said, just step away. Like, now is not the time. So, you know, I kind of did that. And I, to be honest with you, for about 3 years, I froze. I just froze. I was lost because I went from being such a driven person. And I've not met many. I've met people with drive, and I'm definitely up there with drive. Certainly before the band, I was so driven. And I just didn't have that anymore. And I felt like I'd been sort of done over by the music business. And so it was almost like, well, why would I step back into that and go back into that world of sharks and craziness? And, you know, I just wasn't ready for it emotionally, mentally. It was so, yeah, I just froze and I was very lost. I remember my partner at the time saying to me, I genuinely have never seen anybody as lost as you.
Yeah, I know it's hard. You know, I suppose that's what I mean. You have to find a new you in a way because you've left that you behind. Like, because isn't it in a way? It's like your kind of career in life, it's like actors. You can go through such varying stages of fame and whatever, but that does change you and can make you feel totally lost. I've seen that with so many mates as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you say that, I kind of wanted to get back to the person that I was before the band.
The person that was happy. I totally get it. That, which actually, you now realize as you get older, you need to find a newer version of that person. And it's not a lesser person, it's a different person. But, you know, just, rather than always, that's what people do, crave to something in the past that actually you're never going to get back. So it's just worked out a newly improved version of that.
No, 100%. But I literally, I mean, long story short, for 10 years, I all I wanted to do was like, I almost wished I'd never done it, if that makes sense.
I'd be in
supermarket, say, and somebody would come over and they'd be like, oh, wow, you're rich from five, you know? And I'd be like, oh, yeah. And then the question would come, what are you doing now? And a little piece of me would die inside because after say, oh, well, this and that, and sort of, you know, just make a polite answer. But when they asked that question, my inner monologue was, I haven't a clue. Your question that I ask myself that every day, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. And again, you're having to put on such a smile and such a, outside as well, which makes it even harder.
I said it was like living a ghost for a long time. And I ran, and I even ran to Australia and lived in Australia for 5 years. And then the big reunion came around, and I can't say I was jumping up and down about it. I was like, oh, really? Like, I can't even imagine getting on stage and singing five songs again. And then, you know, there was meetings, and I was doing them remotely in Australia, and all the boys were in, like, you know, board meetings and stuff. And then Jay decided not to do it. And I thought, well, it's not the full lineup, so I don't know whether I want to do it. And Scott called me, and I was on the phone for 2 hours, and he was like, look, come on, you know, it doesn't matter. Let's just do it. You know, it might be nice to just revisit it and put it to bed and put a lot of demons to bed and things like that. And I agreed to it. I said, okay, all right, let's give it a whirl. And for me, I was only popping over to do the TV show, maybe do the tour and then go back to Australia. And then my life just once I got back on stage, started singing the songs, I was like, do you know what? This isn't so bad. Like, this is all right. I'm enjoying this. And it like an old friend or something. And I got to the worst stage fright ever, the first performance of at the Hammersmith Apollo. I nearly froze. And I was like, I don't think I can do it. And it was We Will Rock You, and we're opening the show, and it's for ITV. And it was, and I was like, too much pressure. And then I sort of just, Scott said he looked across at me and he could tell, he went, there's something wrong with him. And he said, I might have to sing his verse. And then all of a sudden I brought the mic up. I got the first couple of lines out and the fans were there like enjoying it. And then it was like, okay.
He's kind of back.
Yeah, and I just got in the flow of it, and then I ended up having a daughter. I'm still living in the UK now,
Together, which is great. It's like a nice organic way. Back then, I suppose, that the big reunion happened, because maybe you wouldn't have ever got back together if it wasn't for that.
I guarantee you, it definitely would not have happened.
Wow, so that's amazing, isn't it? Like something like that, because quite a few, but the other bands, I remember it. That who else was on it? Like,
Whippy there Witch was Atomic, there was 911, there was Blue, there was our series. I think that was everyone.
And what was it like? Because how many years later was that than when you split? How much older were you?
10 years later.
10 years later. Wow. And that is a long time when you're, you know, especially in a boy band doing those songs, dancing around and stuff. It must have been quite terrifying getting back to it.
It was a weird one. Another thing as well that, you know, like I said about my taste in music.
Yeah.
So after the band, I don't know. I guess it's like when I look back, it's a bit of an immaturity, really, that I'd be out in a pub, say, and people would be like, oh, yeah. And I'd be like, yeah, yeah. like, yeah, from that rubbish pop band, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And I'd be really apologetic about it with guys especially. And then, like, now I'm like, I'm really proud of what
championing
we did, and I'm
it.
Really
yeah.
proud of the
yeah.
And I'm like, what, you know, what, you know, just because I wasn't in Nirvana, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah, you did something. And also, I do think our attitude has changed, especially in the UK, of these, you know, loads of bands are back. You know, like Steps have kind of become cool now, whereas you would never say you like Steps. Eurovision's now championed rather than just laughed at. I do think we've kind of changed as well to making champions of people that were actually, you are pop. Do you know what I mean? Five were a massive, massive pop band that we haven't seen the like of since.
Well, yeah, we were kind of, there's definitely a uniqueness about our music, I think, that we did something a little bit different under that pop umbrella, which again, I am proud of, you know, that kind of rock, rap, funky thing with pop, you know, all in that kind of pop mishmash. Yeah.
It's cool that you'll be going to weddings when you're like 70 and Keep On Moving will probably still come on the dance floor. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've got a friend actually, and he said, because when you're a part of something, it's different. You know, you don't see it quite as. And he was like, no, mate. It was like, you know, you got to realize, like, you have a couple of songs that have really, like, made it into the long term psyche of
music.
Of music, yeah. And it's like, wow, you know what? Like, I didn't quite appreciate that at the time, but I really do now.
It's amazing. And so let's talk about the new venture. Let's get the new song on in a second. But so the new venture is the 998. Obviously, you're still with Five doing, you know, the festivals and all things like that, which is amazing.
Absolutely.
But this has come about with Liam Keegan, you said as well, who's a producer. So he's worked with, like we said, Sia, Carly Rae Jepsen, Usher, Foxes, Selena Gomez, loads of people. How's that? How are you mates? How's that come about, this new venture?
So, I mean, bottom line is, number one, Liam Keegan is just a top lad. He really is a top lad. Like, I mean, he's just an absolute diamond. I mean, we got similar stories in that, like, he found out he was being a little bit diddled. So, you know, we have that in common. And we met on a writing camp. We wrote a song that song will never see the light of day. But, you know, it was a cool song. And we just hit it off. And he actually then, like, a year goes by. Then COVID happens. Lockdowns happen. And then we hadn't really spoken, and he just messaged me, do you want to make a tune? Like, do you want to meet up and make a tune? I was like, yeah, all right, cool. So we met up and we made one tune, and then we made another tune, and then we made another tune, and we were like, yeah, all right. This is kind of cool. It's working, isn't it? And, you know, and I'd, you know, got heavily into production. That's kind of what got me through lockdown.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, we in the spring, we made Sunshine. It was a spring, summery spring day, and the sun was out, and it just inspired us to make this sort of pop house piano tune. And we thought, you know, you can sit on things and go, well, we just went, look, it's summer. Let's just
get
roll
out
with the punches, get it out independently, and just get the ball rolling and just see where it's just throw caution to the wind and just go for it and have a laugh with it and see where we end up with it. And that's exactly what we're doing.
And that's for today. It comes out today. That must be exciting. It's just exciting to see. I mean, I think it's going to do amazingly. It's brilliant. I mean, it's so much hard to get radio playing stuff like that these days. There's so many out there. But I mean, it must just be nice doing stuff like you said. You know, this is your kind of music that you've always loved. So it must be nice suddenly releasing something that actually is totally you.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you know, you've just heard me talk and everything. And, you know, like I said, that running away and everything. Now that I'm back doing the performing with the boys, and now I'm creating every day and being creative, it's like I now realize 100% who and what I am and what I enjoy doing. And, you know, and that 10 years out, there was always something missing. But I was running from the fact that it is this. So now I'm just, you know, embracing what I love. So, you know, yeah.
Oh, mate, cool. Well, I hope it does so well. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been amazing. I could talk to you for days. It's been amazing reminiscing and talking about Five and everything. And really good luck with this. It's everyone can download this now. It's the 998. It's called Sunshine. We're going to put it on to end the podcast. Never really do that, but that's amazing. But, yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Lee. Thanks for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And I'll let you end it. Let's end the podcast with you. It's a bit like we've been going back to radio days. You introduce it, the brand new song.
Okay. So this is Richie Neville of Five, but this is my other project. It's the 998, and this is Sunshine.
Yeah.